Thanks for clicking on our podcast. This is John Fraser, and with my partner in wine down in the Cape, Michael Olivier, each week we taste the very best that the Cape has to offer in wines or spirits, whatever tickles our fancy, and hopefully it'll tickle yours as well. And welcome back to another week of Divine Intervention, where we gather a few hungry, eager palates in our Joburg studio, and we travel down to Cape Town to our food and wine guru, who tells us what we're getting right and what we're getting wrong. Today, we are trying a couple of wines from one of South Africa's more upmarket, one some might say more expensive estates. It's a partnership between Burgundy and the Cape, Bouchard Finlayson. We're trying two of their reds today, and hopefully they'll be jolly nice. We will be the judges. Joining us from Cape Town, as always, is our food and wine guru, award-winning chef and food writer and all sorts of good things, Michael Olivier. Michael, such a pleasure to have you back.
John, thank you so much. Looking forward to this tasting.
Excellent. Well, you should do, because you chose the wine. We will let you know if you got it right. In the Joburg studio, we have, once again, for I think the third week or fourth week in a row, RJ van Spandonk from the Core Group. They, of course, are the people who import and sell Apple products, or distribute Apple products and sell them through their Apple shops, where you don't buy apples, you buy products. We have Chris Gilmore from Absa / Barclays, which quite recently lost its CEO, but I'm sure it will struggle on regardless. We have Jeremy Sampson, who used to be good at branding, and now he's good at drinking wine. He's brilliant at branding. That's the first time somebody's threatened me with a wine glass, Jeremy. I'm ready.
It won't be the last, John.
Really, I thought you were such a gentle chap. And last, certainly not least, although he is normally last, Malcolm McDonald, who I first met when he worked for Tersos. Now he does the IT for one of our big insurance companies, and he still drives a very nice car. Malcolm, great to chat to you. Okay, that's enough waffle from me. The wine is the Gulping Peak 2012 from Bouchard Finlayson. I have drunk this before. Let's see what Michael Olivier makes of it. Michael?
John, yeah, this is really a great, great wine for me. What they've done on Bouchard Finlayson is that they've copied the Burgundian way of planting the Pinot Noir in very tight rows, the sort of rows that only horses could get through in the past. And this leads to a greater competition between the vines, which, of course, gives them less vigor. And wines which are much deeper in color and much more sort of wide in flavor. Here you've got a wine which has got just the most wonderful expression of fruit. There's dark berries and there's plums. They're both on the nose and in the flavor. And then, of course, it's quite sort of open textured. There's lovely velvety feeling there. The tannins are well integrated, and just lots of enjoyment from this lovely long finish at the end.
Well, I'm enjoying it, Michael, and I must say, I have had a problem in the past with some Pinot Noirs and indeed some of the Bouchard Finlayson ones, but this is pretty well balanced. My one reservation about this is that although I can admire and like it, I think I'd like it a hell of a lot more in 10 years' time if one could age this wine.
Oh, yeah.
That was a yes then.
It would certainly mature for a long time and obviously just improve as time goes on.
And while you're talking about horses in the vineyards, I must tell you my latest French joke. Why did the horse cross the vineyard?
Why?
Because the nasty Frenchman wanted him for supper.
Okay.
RJ, beat that. Won't be difficult.
In the past, I've been dismissive about Pinot Noir, and Michael at that stage promised to take us on a tour of the Cape Winelands, and we're still waiting for an invitation, so maybe it's forthcoming after this podcast. But I'm sure he would have taken us to Bouchard Finlayson, because this is the one, or one of the very few South African Pinot Noirs that I like and that I've liked for a long time. I remember coming to this country in 1998, And at that stage, I visited Bushar Finlayson, which had only been around for a couple of years. I think the vineyard or the winemaker started in 1989. And it had already, within a decade, garnered such a stellar reputation in South Africa. Now, even though this is a Pinot Noir, it reminds me a lot more of their other wines. They're also very well known for their Italian grape varietals. And I think this actually has more of that characteristic. It's a heavier wine. And maybe that's why I appreciate it a lot more. But Galpin Peak has always been one of my favorite South African wines.
Michael McDonald, Pinot Noir lover.
This is delicious. This is, it's just nothing wrong with that. No, but it's more than just nothing wrong with it. It's just delightful. Really lovely wine.
Excellent. Well, need you say more? Jeremy Sampson.
And again, the brand speaks to me very strongly. You know, Mr. Finlayson, as I recall, started at Hamilton Russell and then moved next door. The Hemel and Hard Valley is one of my favourite all-time valleys when it comes to wine. So from Hermanus, you go up through the valley. I was there on one occasion, and I'd recommend to anyone popping in, having a look. And it was Mr. Finlayson who held the door open as the wind screamed up through the valley, because the terroir there is quite interesting. The other thing I'd mention, which you might not know about, is it's a fantastic place to go and have a very rustic platter for lunch. And I've done it on a couple of occasions. So they bring you a platter, which one platter's enough for two or three people, and then you just gorge yourself on the lovely wines. And it's fantastic, absolutely wonderful. Makes me want to go down to Cape Town this afternoon or tomorrow.
I must put them up in the platter guide. Chris Gilmore.
As I was saying in a previous incarnation, I'm not a big drinker of Pinot Noir, but this is in a different league to recent Pinot Noirs that I have tried. And it really is very, very stylish, very, very smooth. And, I don't know, Michael, what's the alcohol content of this? It feels a little bit higher than usual.
Yeah, it's 14.26.
Okay. Now, this is lovely. This really is a beautiful wine.
Excellent. Well, I think we're all agreed on this. Michael, Olivier, just returning to the theme which we were discussing earlier, the problems South Africa has in Pinot Noir. This is from a particular area which does produce quite a few highly rated Pinot Noirs. That seems to be one of the secrets, isn't it? That if you plant the right grape in the right place, you're more likely than not to get the right sort of wine.
I think Pinot Noir is a grape which really expresses the soil in which it's grown and the climatic conditions of the preceding year, and so that has a huge huge influence. And people used to say we don't have vintage variation. We do actually. We have some summers are hotter, some are cooler, so there's rain at the wrong time, there's rain at the right time. So, yeah, I think Pinot Noir very much expresses where it comes from. There was one winemaker, and I can't remember for the moment, who said it to me, was that he thought also that the best fertilizer for any vine was the boots of the winemaker.
Oh, okay, well, I don't detect any rubber in this, or cheese, or any of those things, which one might find in a winemaker's boots, but not bad at all. Okay, Michael Olivier, let's move swiftly on to our second wine of this evening from the Bouchard Finlayson Estate. It's the Hannibal 2013. Hannibal, what on earth are they doing naming their wine after an ancient bloke that used to ride elephants?
Well, what they've done is, in fact, if you look at the label, there's an elephant, chap on an elephant in the middle there. This is really just a combination of French grapes and Italian grapes, which was the route that Hannibal took over the Alps. So you've got Sangiovese, which is the leading wine in the blend, there's 52% there. Then lesser quantities of Pinot Noir, Nebbiolo, Mourvèdre, Shiraz, and Barbera. So it's very much a sort of led by the Italian varieties. And of course, they took those in 89, and it took 12 years for the first commercial launch of this wine. As you see, the colour is just this bright, bright garnet colour, which pales towards the edge of the glass. It has the most wonderful aromas of sort of roadside bramble berries, black cherries, and sort of spicy plum there as well. And they're sort of plums which have that lovely sort of sourness underneath the skin. And all of this sort of nasal stuff happens on the palate as well, and pulls it into the most delicious mouthful with this lovely sort of smooth, creamy finish. And it's just a little reminiscence of some good Italian leather there as well, which probably comes from the Shiraz, I would think, but it is there, and it just sort of adds to the whole hugely.
Well, I suppose, Michael, one of the challenges when you're blending different grapes and grape varietals into a wine is to get it right. And I have to say that for me, they did get it right. This is a very, very enjoyable wine, certainly one that I would be very happy to have in a restaurant with a whole variety of food, then order some more food and another three bottles of the wine, because this is my kind of wine. That's all I need to say. RJ?
I think we're committing an act of infanticide here. We shouldn't have opened this bottle. The grapes being what they are, this is the sort of wine you need to lay down for 10 years to really appreciate it. As I said before, Hannibal is one of my favorite wines in South Africa, but this is not the bottle that I remember it being, and it's purely because the wine is just way too young. That said, you can see the prospect of the child, and I think 5, 6, 7 years down the line, this will be an outstanding wine for a wintry Gauteng Highveld evening, and I'll definitely stock up on it.
Michael Oliver, do you concur that this will get better with age, like me?
It has to. It has to. Absolutely. Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Jeremy Sampson, about things getting better with age, you're an expert on that.
Yes, John. Experience comes with age, as they say. But I've been lucky enough to go to a Bouchard Finlayson, I'm sure, John, you're going to say something now, vertical tasting. They come up to Johannesburg, as I recall, twice a year or so. And I went to one, I think it was 18 months ago, and it was really very educational, brilliant wines, and the consistency, and exactly as RJ is saying, go back 10, 15 years if you can, and the wines have changed totally, the complexity, the richness, not always, of course, but for a lot of them. And I think Bouchard Finlayson is one of those estates where you can rely on it to put it away, and it'll last, and it'll get better and better.
Michael McDonald, would you put some of this in your trunk?
The real challenge would be, you know, actually leaving it alone, because it is delicious. I think it's delicious right now. I mean, I can only imagine what it'd be like after laying it down for a few years. But I haven't had this before, and certainly immediately a favourite. Really delicious wine. Perfectly balanced.
Chris Gilmore?
I'm finding the tastes and the flavours and the aromas a bit confusing. And that may relate to what you guys have been saying about it's perhaps a bit on the young side. So it would be lovely to try this in a few years' time and see if there's less confusion coming through.
Okay, well, we'll keep the rest of the bottle and invite you back in a decade. Michael Oliver, just on that general point, because of the economics of the wine trade, they make it, they bottle it, and they sell it. And very few of us in South Africa have the temperature-controlled cellars that one does find more often in Europe or North America, where wine lovers do preserve their wines at the right temperature for a number of years. It's a pity, really. Why don't the wine estates do that for you?
Well, I think, again, because of cost. But there are companies, I mean, the wine cellar which operates in Johannesburg and in Cape Town, they will store wine for you under the most ideal of conditions. But as you say, you know, that people buy wine, most of the wine that's bought in this country is bought in supermarkets and consumed within 24 hours. People, in general, just simply don't have cellars anymore to do this kind of maturation.
RJ, is that a tradition we should be encouraging? blast a hole in your floor and stick some wine in the cavity?
You don't have to. As Michael said, I know of a couple of companies in Johannesburg that will store the wine for you, provided that you buy it through them. And originally, they only focused on international wines. But fortunately for us, they've started focusing on some of the more boutique-ish South African wines. I do believe that it's worth building a wine cellar, even if it's a virtual one, because you can start doing what Jeremy was saying earlier, is have these vertical wine tastings, and that's really how you start to learn to understand a certain area or a certain winemaker, or you see to start to see differences between successive winemakers on the same estate. So I heartfully concur, build your wine cellar.
Chris Coburn? Nice if you can do it.
Some years ago, when I was at the largest African stockbroking firm in the world, Sinakal Mutana Kitsoff, there was a partner there, and he had this house up in Northcliffe, and he had a wine cellar there, and he even went to the extent of having these small cypress trees beside it to make sure that there wasn't too much heat coming into the thing. And it was down there, and it was beautiful. And the only problem was, I mean, he had thousands of bottles, I mean, literally thousands of bottles of wine, but he must have consumed a good 20 or 30 of them a week. And but it was great. It was an absolute pleasure going in there and coming back to what RJ was saying, getting an education, fleeting as it was, about wine. But yeah, it was a wonderful experience. It's great. So yeah, if you've got the space, if you've got the ability financially to actually invest in this type of thing, it's wonderful.
And is he still with us?
I haven't seen him for a long time.
Okay. He's probably just sitting in the cellar having a good time. Jeremy Sampson, collecting wine, and obviously there are some who will do it for love of wine. There'll be some who thinks it's a great investment, the speculators. And we also hear about these elite wines where there's a lot of forgery, a lot of problems. It's a hazardous business, but it does have its rewards.
I think it does have its rewards. A lot of people say, we'll buy a case of 12 and put it away and have one every year just to see how it's going, and that way you can monitor it. I think also in South Africa, it's only quite recently we've become conscious of vintages. For the most part, we didn't worry, whereas the reality is that they do go up and down. Even in Bordeaux, they're saying even 2013, don't buy any Bordeaux from 2013. The weather was diabolical. Even in England, where I've just come back from a couple of weeks there, I don't think they produced any decent wine in 2013 because the weather was so diabolical. Here we know that I think 2014 is meant to be going to be one of the most fantastic, or 2015, fantastic years they've ever had. So this is where let's be conscious more, and as RJ is saying, let's do some vertical tasting and we'll learn more about the wine, the terroir, and what's going on.
Well, Michael McDonald, as well as being one of the research scientists behind our Divine Intervention specially tailor-made, tailor-blown glasses, which we use for these tastings of beer, wine, and whatever we can lay our hands on, you're one of the few people I know who actually has a temperature-controlled wine storage facility. Was that a good investment? Because these things aren't cheap.
I don't think they're that expensive anymore. I think it's well... You know, if you're buying appliances for a house, it's probably a fraction of the cost of the total appliance bill. It's a really small fraction of the cost of the total appliance bill. It depends how many you want to keep, and I think that's the real challenge. Is that as was said earlier, this gentleman has thousands of bottles of wine, and space is probably the biggest challenge these days. I mean, I've got a cellar there that can store 30, 40 odd bottles of wine. It's a very far cry from thousands of bottles of wine, and so I could consume that lot in 6 months easily. And then, how's the process going to, how are you going to keep that for several years? It's just not going to work. So you have to, I think, have the luxury of space.
Well, invite this tasting panel round and we'll get through it in 6 hours. Michael Olafia, how do you approach this challenge? Do you drink it as fast as you can, or do you try to keep a bit aside?
John, I've probably got 400 to 500 bottles of wine in my cellar. It's not hardly a cellar. It's a little room at the back of the house which gets little sunshine. I think I mean, I'm a bit worried about Malcolm saying that he's got 30 to 40 bottles and taken 6 months to finish them. we've got wines that we do keep, but essentially the wines that we drink are the wines that are available on the market shelves at the time.
Okay, well, all things to all people, it's all a matter of budget, and to be quite honest, if all you can afford is a bottle of supermarket wine once a week, why not? As long as you enjoy it, as long as you appreciate the time and effort that goes into the wine production and the wine business. Many thanks to all our tasters this week, to RJ van Spandok from the Core Group. RJ, great to have you here.
Good to be here.
To Chris Gilmore from Barclays.
Always a pleasure.
To Malcolm McDonald, from Tursos, now in the financial services industry. And last, certainly not least, Jeremy Sampson.
Gorgeous wines. Thanks, John.
And, of course, these tastings would not be as enjoyable as they are without the ethereal presence of Michael Oliphir. Michael, great to chat to you again.
John, thank you.
I'm John Fraser. That was Divine Intervention.